Welcome to the Start, Scale, Succeed podcast with me, your host, Nicole Higgins, the buyer and retail coach, sharing tips, advice, and insight from entrepreneurs that have just launched to multi-million pound business owners. We will be discussing the challenges they faced, advice they would give, and the milestones they achieved and how they got there. Also joining me will be a broad range of experts with some tips and practical how-tos, episodes that will help your business grow and to enable you to live the life you crave. The types of experts that you'll hear from will be those that you will find beneficial as you start and scale your business, from branding and social media experts to mindset coaches and PR and marketing. There will also be solo episodes from me discussing a variety of topics, from sourcing to maximizing the profit in your business. The retail market in the Middle East is worth about $80 billion. But how do you, as a brand, break into that market? What are the things that you need to know? What's the red tape that you need to know all about? Today, I am joined by Abby, founder of Base Brands, and we are going to talk all about launching in the Middle East, breaking into the Middle East, as Abby is based in the Middle East and is an ex-colleague of mine from Primark. Abby, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So I know you from our Primark days, but can you tell the listeners what you do now and what Base Brands is about?
Yes. So my name is Abby. I live in Dubai, but I'm originally from just outside of London in the UK. And for the last 10 years, I've been a buyer. So for retailers like Primark, which is where we met, Superdrug, and then I actually moved to Dubai to be a buyer for a big retailer here. We moved during COVID, thought we'd do a year in Dubai and then go home, but we absolutely love it. So we are still here 3 years later. But then I think what happened over COVID throughout the whole world is the retail market completely flipped on its head. And what customers wanted to buy, how they wanted to buy, completely changed. And the rise of small businesses really came in, especially in the Middle East. And so Base Brands, my business, I started last year. And essentially, we are an A to Z shop for a small brand. So we cover everything from creating your brand logo, your brand identity, targeting your customer, all the way through to helping you create your product, to actually launching and marketing. So we kind of touch on everything that a small brand needs.
And I mean, with the Middle East, if you explain to people the setup, because there's lots of large conglomerates, isn't there, in terms of from a retail and retail groups. For those people who don't know, can you explain a little bit about how retail is set up in the Middle East?
Yeah, so the Middle East, I guess, when you talk about the Middle East, it can be a lot of different countries. So you have obviously the UAE, which is probably the most well-known, but then you have Saudi, you have Egypt, you have Jordan, you have Kuwait, Bahrain, and they're all very, very different markets. So I think when people are talking about the Middle East, it's actually be very specific on who you want to target and what market. So in kind of terms of today, I think we'll focus mainly on Dubai and that market, because even the UAE is obviously seven different within that, and Dubai is in between Sharjah and Abu Dhabi, and they would have completely different customer bases. So for today, we'll just focus on Dubai. But in the main, there are some product development businesses and retailers who actually develop their own product and they sell under their own brand names, but that is a relatively small part of the market. The main market in Dubai is dominated by American and Western retailers. So you have Sephora, you have Carrefour, you've got Zara, you've got H&M, you've got IKEA. Here, but they are all ran as franchises out here. So they are owned by Arab holding companies such as Al Shire Group, Shaloub Group, Alpha Tame Group, and they have the rights for that brand within Dubai. So the buyers in those head offices here would essentially be working with the buyers in the main head office, maybe in America or in Europe, and they would be selecting product from their ranges. They wouldn't necessarily be doing product development themselves.
And how easy is it then, if you are a brand and you want to break into the Dubai market, is there much leeway for those retail buyers to buy off plan, I suppose, to buy specifically Dubai brands for that Dubai market?
Yeah, so there definitely is scope for that. And a lot of retailers here, they want to be very market specific, and we'll go into the differences in the market later, but there is a need for completely different products that wouldn't necessarily be in Europe, even down to homeware retail, for example. The sizes of the houses here, the heights of the ceilings are completely different to what we have in the UK or Ireland, for example. So sometimes they do have to make amendments and have products specific to this market. However, for some of the big retailers like Sephora, the brands that are in Sephora in the Middle East are the same brands that would be in Sephora in LA, for example. So it really depends per retailer.
And for someone that wants to
break into the Dubai market, what are your top tips? What do they need to know?
Yeah, so I would say, first of all, like I said, define what part of the Middle East you want to go into. Dubai is a very multicultural emirate in terms of 95% of those who live in Dubai are expats. Traditionally, when we think of an expat, we think of an American or a British person. But when I say expats, that can be Indian, that can be Filipino. And actually, the majority, the largest ethnicity in Dubai is Indians, followed by Filipinos, then into Western. So I think definitely do your research into your target customer. So if you're going into Dubai, who are you actually targeting in Dubai? Because it's actually impossible to target all of those in the same way. So I think being very specific on who you want to target is so, so important. I would also say pricing is a big one. So you can't really just take a standard conversion rate and say, right, that's what I'm going to price my product at in Dubai. I would say do your research around competition. What are similar prices selling for here? On average, the average spend per customer is higher in Dubai than it would be, say, in the UK, but that doesn't mean that you can suddenly put your price as an expensive price. The market here as well is very discount and promotional focused as well. So even IKEA, for example, which traditionally IKEA doesn't discount anywhere in the world, but they do heavily discount in the Middle East. They are constantly running some sort of sale. So I think, again, look at what you need to do to be competitive against your competition here. And I would say invest in logistics. So I'll go into it later, but everything happens now in Dubai. You could call up in the morning and book a hair appointment, a nail appointment, or a doctor's appointment for 2 hours time. And people don't really plan ahead because of that. Everything happens instantly in Dubai. Most companies in Dubai offer same day delivery. So they'll deliver within 1 or 2 hours. So if you are shipping a product and you're keeping your kind of main hub, say in the UK, and it's going to take 3 to 5 days to arrive at the customer in Dubai, that's a major disadvantage for your brand and you're not going to be competitive against the market. So I think really set yourself up for success in Dubai.
And in terms of trying to get into some of the Middle East retail stores and approaching the buyers there, what are the margins they're expecting or the markup that they need? Is it the same as the UK? Is it that 2.5, 50, 60%? What's it like?
Yeah, broadly it's the same. So private label buyers will be looking for kind of 60, 70% margin simply because, like I said, it's a very promotional led market. So they know that they're going to be discounting. Branded buyers who might be buying, say, your small brand, they would be looking at kind of 30 to 40%, which I believe is pretty much the same as the UK.
Yeah, so probably then like a 2.2 or a 2.3 markup. And then what about culturally then? I mean, I know there is a large expat market, but what do you think people should be aware of culturally about the differences?
Yeah, so this is the biggest point. And the number one, probably most obvious one, is the weather. So we have the same seasons as the UK. So the winter period here is on average between 25 to 30 degrees every day. But the summer period here is between 40 to 50 degrees. So essentially it's summer all year round. So you wouldn't have like an autumn, winter and a spring, summer season here. So bikinis, outdoor garden furniture sells all year round in Dubai. So that's the number one thing to think about. What I would also say with that, though, is where it's so hot here in the summer, a lot of people, if they can, tend to leave the country. So the summer here is the down season. So absolutely do not launch a brand in the summer in Dubai because it will have some traction, but it's absolutely not going to have the traction that you want. And you don't want to do that and then think that your brand isn't successful because of that. So obviously spring, summer in the UK is probably one of the best times, but not here. I would also say geographically, the United Arab Emirates is literally significantly smaller than the UK and the population here is less. So although their average spend is higher, your quantities that you're going to be thinking about need to actually be much lower than potentially, say, the UK or even American or European market. Saying that, malls and shopping is a big part of the culture here. So if anyone's been to Dubai, you know that we are famous for shopping malls and they are massive. They are the biggest in the world. They have ski slopes in them. They have restaurants. They have beauty salons. They have shops. And people go to malls almost daily. It's free parking. So again, they encourage people to go. And in the summer, people go to malls simply to get out of the heat. There's nowhere else to, like, even if you want to get some steps in, unless you're going to go on a treadmill, your only option is a mall because you can't go outside. And then even in the winter, you know, people love shopping in Dubai. And then take, say, Emiratis. It's traditionally the woman doesn't work. And I say traditionally because obviously times are changing. So during the week when her husband's at work, her kids are at school, she will go shopping. So when I worked for a large retailer here, we had to make sure that newness was hitting our store 3 times a week. We wouldn't say have 1 or 2 launches a month or a quarter. We would make sure there were new products 2 or 3 times a week because she was going shopping 2 or 3 times a week. So there's a big kind of cultural shift towards shopping here. So again, in the UK, I know a lot of UK retailers struggle with footfall, and they actually put experiential things in stores, and they want to really get people to come into their store and stay for as long as possible. In Dubai, there's no issue with the footfall itself. People are happy to go shopping. So they would kind of be the biggest two. I think one more, which most people probably wouldn't think about, but is customer service. So if you've ever been to Dubai, you'll know that the service is incredible, and the sheer volume of people in shops and who work for retailers here is crazy. So you'll go into a shop, there'll be somebody standing at the door ready to welcome you. There'll be somebody that comes up to you to try and help you. And as British people, we actually don't like this. We like to kind of mill around the store, have a mooch and do our own thing. And if we need help, we'll ask. And I found it very pushy when I first moved here in terms of somebody was constantly coming over to me to ask me if I needed any help. And Sephora now, actually in Dubai, they have 2 colors of baskets. And if you pick up a red basket, it means you don't need any help. You're just browsing. And if you have a black basket, they can come over and talk to you. So, yeah, but I would say that even translates onto online retailers. So, for example, having like online chat features, WhatsApp is a massive thing here. You book restaurants through WhatsApp, you book hotels through WhatsApp in Dubai. So just having a way that customers can contact you if they've got any problems really, really quickly is so, so important here, because customers expect that level of service.
Are you ready to scale your e-commerce store? Want to do it without having to wear yet another hat and become a digital marketing expert? This episode is brought to you by Neon Digital Clicks, the paid traffic partner for family and women's e-commerce brands wanting to scale their stores from 5-figure to 6-figure months using Meta, Google and Klaviyo marketing services. Neon is offering listeners a free scaling audit worth £3,000. So whether your sales have plateaued or you're looking for growth, this is a great opportunity to lift the lid on your business and identify where the opportunities are hiding. Head to scalingglow.com to discover just how much revenue you could scale your store to this year.
And so having, if you were a UK-based brand and you wanted to enter into the Dubai market, having people on the ground, logistics on the ground is a key thing to have.
I would say as well, when you actually look at the history of Dubai, the city itself is really only, say, 30, 40 years old. And so the retail market is probably only 10 years old in terms of the grand scheme of things. And so they're still figuring out some of the legalities, the compliance and the rules. And so you may speak to 3 different people who all tell you different things. And so I think having 1 trusted person on the ground who can find out an answer for you, who can find the best option for you, will alleviate a lot of stress for brands as well, because I think sometimes when you're so far away, you hear all of these different opinions and then it just seems like too much, you know, it's too complicated, I'm not going to do it, but it's actually not.
And what kind of red tape have you come across for brands? What kind of issues have you stumbled across when you've been working with brands?
So the biggest one is products here have to be approved by Dubai Municipality. So that's essentially Dubai government, and it's only regulated products. So it's products like food and drink, cosmetics, medical products, and you have to submit them onto an online portal and they essentially approve them, and you submit your artwork, you submit test reports, but there's a long list of reports you actually need. In the main, kind of testing regulations and product regulations are the same as British standards, but they require additional certification. So a lot of them, actually, I've just done a brand who's producing in China cosmetics, and we had to get reports from the Chinese consulate actually stamped, which again wouldn't kind of be something that you do in the UK. So there are a few extra hoops that you have to jump through. Obviously, you need to have Arabic on your packaging here. And again, it sounds quite simple. I'll go on to Google Translate. It's actually much harder. So again, with this brand, Arabic is read right to left, not left to right. And so we've got the Arabic translations from obviously an Arabic speaker. The artworker in the UK had copied across the artwork onto the packaging, but because she's on a UK laptop or keyboard, it's then put it all backwards on the packaging. So it's just small things like that are going to cause issues, but they're easy to fix, of course. So I'd say the number one thing is product approval, and it's not necessarily that expensive. I think it costs on average about £20 a product to get it approved, but the issue is time. It adds potential 2 months onto your lead time.
100%. So it's planning that in, isn't it, for your launch that you have. And is there anything that you're seeing in terms of trends or how the retail market in Dubai is changing, or what the buyers are looking for, or what they want?
Yeah, so a massive one at the moment, which will come probably as no surprise, is sustainability and organic recycled products. So again, in the UK, we've kind of been on this journey for probably the past like 5 to 7 years. In Dubai, even 2 years ago, we didn't recycle really at all. In Dubai, we still use plastic bags, like products come wrapped and wrapped in plastic, which coming from the UK is quite a shock to see. They've now put in place lots of laws to stop that. We are on the path to a greener future in Dubai, but the retail market is quite behind that at the moment. And again, you will go into stores and you'll see a lot of packaging where they just haven't quite made those changes. It hasn't been a priority for them. So they are massively looking for organic brands, sustainable brands here, and the customer wants that as well. So I'm sure you may be aware, but there's been a big influx of expats from, say, Russia, from the UK, from Europe into Dubai over the last year. And we are used to having organic products and vegan products, and they're not readily available here. They are more so now, but there's definitely a big gap in the market for that here. But there needs to be a big education piece still around that, because the market's not quite as used to seeing those products as, say, we would be in the UK. Then another one would probably be, like I said, just the way people live here is a little bit different. So it's mainly apartment living or villa living here. So I would say even the type of products that are sold for the home here would be, say, we have very tall ceilings, the same as American houses, for example. We have tiled floors, so rugs and soft furnishings actually sell very well in Dubai. Garden furniture sells all year round. Swimming pool accessories sell all year round. So there's some kind of fundamentals about the way of life here, which make some products do very, very well in Dubai. Then my last one will be beauty and cosmetics. So again, ladies have to be summer ready at all times in Dubai. So even things like laser hair removal is like one of the number one treatments in every single salon in Dubai. I'm sure, again, you've seen on Instagram, the girls here, most of them anyway, this is a bit of a stereotype, but you know, they have their hair done regularly, they have their nails done. They like to wear beautiful makeup. Even Emirati ladies who wear headscarves, you know, they've got beautiful skin and they wear lovely makeup. So that's quite important as well. The cosmetics industry in Dubai is huge.
And what mistakes have you seen small brands make trying to break into the market or launch in the market?
So I would say not having that help on the ground. Like I said, when you're so far away, it can be quite intimidating, this market. And when I actually moved to Dubai as a buyer, I came at it from a completely different angle. And it was maybe arrogance or naivety, but I was thinking, you know, I've bought for Europe, I've bought for Ireland, I've bought for the USA. How different could the Middle East be? But it's very, very different. So I would say find somebody that you trust and that can do the groundwork for you. Otherwise, you will spend so much time and potentially money running around trying to find an answer that might not actually be the right answer. And laws here can change overnight as well. So it's really important to have somebody who's actually aware of what's happening in the market. I would say make sure again that you cover legalities. So to have a business in Dubai, you have to register your business and you get a business license. And on your business license, it will have different business activities. So for example, you might have sale of cosmetics products, you might have sale of food products, you might have marketing. There can be so, so many business activities, but make sure that your business license covers the product that you are selling. And with that, you get your bank account, you get your company address. So it kind of covers you for all of that, but make sure you've got that in place. And that would be step one, is getting all of those things in place before you even go any further.
And how easy is it to get that, the business license, and to register a business?
It's very easy. So again, when you know the right person to go to, even when I registered my business here, I kind of put a note out on a generic Facebook group. I think it's called like Brits in Dubai. And I said, can anyone help me with this? And I must have had 50 messages saying, WhatsApp this person, WhatsApp this person. And I had prices that were like 10,000 dirhams, which is like £2,000 difference. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. So I think, again, use your person on the ground to guide you into what business license you need. But in general, it's really quite simple. And you can get a business license within 24 hours as well. So it's very quick.
If you're a brand that is registered in, say, in the UK, but is also registered then in Dubai, I know you're not an accountant. But how does that side of things work then? Or do you know?
So again, it's a bit of a gray area. So there is 5% VAT, but you only pay VAT after you are earning a certain amount of money, and it's profits in your business as well. So to get to that point, your business would have to be doing very, very well, where you'd be happy to give them the 5%, to be honest. They did just this year, about 6 months ago now, they introduced corporation tax as well, which certain businesses have to pay 9%. But it, again, is after you get over a certain revenue threshold. So to be honest, for small businesses, I would say, yeah, it's tax-free at the beginning, but make sure you keep records of your books, keep your accounts, keep your kind of outgoings, ingoings, just so you've got that if you're ever asked. But you do have to register for tax at the beginning, which again, your business license company will do all of that for you. You don't need to do anything. It doesn't cost anything, but you just have to be registered. And to not be registered is actually illegal, and you can get fined for that.
And so if you're based in the UK and you're working with a retailer, you, in terms of payment terms and logistics and delivery, you know, you might be on 30 days payment, 60 days payment, 90 days payment, 120 days, or there might be settlement discounts. What kind of, for a small brand that's working, that wants to get into a retailer in the Middle East or in Dubai, what kind of payment terms should they expect? What kind of logistics? Is it the nominated logistics? What, you know, in terms of if you were comparing it to the UK, what's it like?
So a lot of brands here will want consignment terms, unfortunately. And I know kind of the UK has moved away from consignment. It's moved more into wholesale. But here, consignment terms, I would say 90% of cases that I've worked on have been consignment. And even some of the biggest brands in the biggest like e-commerce retailers here are working on consignment. In general, those consignment terms will be, you get the report at the end of the month to show what's been sold, and you get paid within 30 days of that. If it is wholesale terms, I would say 60 days is standard payment terms. But again, retailers here want you to handle as much as possible. And so I would recommend that you have like a 3PL system here. And again, it's not as expensive as it would be in the UK. There's a lot of empty land in Dubai. There's a lot of kind of depots, warehouses, a lot of drivers here. So you could afford, like small brands could definitely afford to have a logistics hub here. They would then manage your delivery to the retailer or your delivery straight to the customer. You would just negotiate a price with them at the beginning per delivery, for example.
And so, but just back to those consignment terms then, if product doesn't get sold, is there a sale or return? Do they operate?
Yes. On average, they would want, say, a year's contract. And I would recommend any brand doesn't go for less than a year's contract. And at the end of that year, if the product hasn't sold, you would actually be expected to go back and pick it up.
And so if you're talking about a beauty product that has an expiry date potentially printed on it over 12 months, or it could be quite risky, I suppose.
100%. What I would say is, and kind of saying it from the retailer side, is that the market here is saturated with brands. You know, we in Dubai, we have the pick of brands from all over the world. There's Australian brands here, there's American brands, there's European brands, there's British brands. And so buyers here really do have the power in terms of if they're going to take you or not. And I guess consignment terms for a buyer is risk-free, but that obviously means that the small brand takes all the risk. So I would say from a brand's perspective, only sign that contract at if you know that this retailer has high footfall or they have lots of people on their website and it's going to add to your brand. I would also say if you are on, say, a sell by date or an expiry date, to then build in promotions with the brand so that you know that you're actually going to sell through that stock and that you're not going to pick up essentially dead stock.
And how open are they to that kind of, I mean, I know, like you said at the beginning, it's quite a promotion and discount led business. Mm-hmm. But when I've worked with brands on the buyer side, it's quite a partnership, but a lot of the time the brand would have led it, you know, in terms of, we want to do this, can we do it? Is it still the same way in terms of Dubai? Is it very brand led, going to the buyer saying, can we, you know, we'd love to do this with you, XYZ?
Yeah,
or is it the buyer kind of talk saying, we need you to be involved in this promotion, we want you to do this?
So there's one, the biggest sales period of the year for the whole market is actually right now, and that's Ramadan. So Ramadan is obviously the month before Eid, and then Eid happens for a week. And essentially what happens during Ramadan is that Muslims fast. And so the month before that, they actually want to get their homes ready. They want to get themselves ready so that they look their best during Ramadan. They may be hosting dinner parties every single night. So they might buy new things for their home. If they're attending dinner parties, they take a gift with them. So the highest footfall period and the highest sales period is just pre-Ramadan and during Ramadan. So a big retailer would probably expect brands to participate in some sort of activity during Ramadan for sure. But then definitely the brand can lead it throughout the year. If they say, you know, say that they're a fitness brand and there's a big fitness event or time of year happening and you want to run a promotion, absolutely you can approach the retailer and say that you want to do that.
And where can people find you, Abby, and how can they work with you?
Yes. So you can get me at base.brands on Instagram or www.basebrandsco.com. They would probably be the easiest way to get to me.
It's such an interesting market and obviously a growing retail landscape as well. There's so much to consider. I mean, the consignment terms, even on its own, I would just wouldn't have, you know, when you're so used to one way.
Yeah. And the UK, you really realize like the UK market and the American market, they're so advanced in terms of retail and operations and planning. And we're not quite there yet in Dubai. So there can be a lot to kind of get through and it can be a bit tricky, but it can absolutely be done. So I wouldn't want brands to kind of look and say, oh my God, it's too much. I'm not going to do it. It definitely, you can get there. And it's very small brand friendly. People love to support small brands and something that's a little bit different. So I would say if you're thinking of Dubai, definitely do it. However, my one caveat would be, you know, I think people get this perception that Dubai is full of money and that they can put a brand in and it's going to do amazingly and they can charge more. And this is going to be the region that makes them millionaires. Unfortunately, it's not quite like that anymore. Maybe was 10, 20 years ago. It's not quite that easy anymore, but it's definitely a great market to try out if you are a small brand.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Abby. Thank you for coming on and sharing all your knowledge and tips. Well, probably not all. You've got loads of knowledge and tips, a fraction of what you know. But thank you so much for joining me. And I will be back again next week with another great guest.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Start, Scale, Succeed. If you've enjoyed today, I would love for you to leave a review and I will see you again next week. If you'd like to hear more from me, your host, Nicole Higgins, you can follow me on Instagram at The Buyer and Retail Coach. Check out my website, www.buyerandretailcoach.com, or find me on LinkedIn. All the links are below in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter, The Step, for lots of helpful tips and advice.